It's estimated it's costing us $1.6 billion a week. That's $12.5 million an hour. On this, the second day of the partial government shutdown, is there a way out of the political impasse? It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On this Politics Wednesday, it's all about the first government shutdown in 17 years. Joining us to talk about the positions of the entrenched parties, their strategies, possible scenarios to get us out of the impasse, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College. And here's a chance for you this hour to give a shout-out about the shutdown to Iowa's congressional delegation. What message do you want to send? Join our conversation after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Politics Wednesday has arrived, just arriving in my seat here in the studio. And joining us today with their political analysis, Wayne Moyer joins us, the Rosenfield Professor of Political Science at Grinnell College. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Ben. Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you on this show today. A very busy week in politics. Tim Hagel with us as well, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa in our Iowa City studio. Hi, Tim.
Hey there.
Well, it's the second day of the partial government shutdown, a big part of our news block devoted to that and the repercussions. There's no clear path forward. Republican and Democratic leaders remain entrenched in separate camps. President Obama, he has summoned the leaders in Congress from both parties to the White House to take place later today. Yesterday, President Obama spoke from the White House Rose Garden. He was flanked by citizens who will benefit from the health exchanges, which opened for business as part of the Affordable Care Act. He said Republicans shouldn't hold the operation of the federal government hostage because they don't like Obamacare.
There are a whole bunch of things that I'd like to see passed through Congress that the House Republicans haven't passed yet. And I'm not out there saying, well, I'm going to let America default unless Congress does something that they don't want to do. That's not how adults operate. Certainly that's not how our government should operate. And that's true whether there's a Democrat in this office or a Republican in this office. Doesn't matter whether it's a Democratic House of Representatives or a Republican-controlled House of Representatives. There's certain rules that everybody abides by because we don't want to hurt other people just because we have a political disagreement. So my basic message to Congress is this: pass a budget, end the government shutdown. Pay your bills. Prevent an economic shutdown. Don't wait. Don't delay. Don't put our economy or our people through this any longer. I'm more than happy to work with them on all kinds of issues.
The president yesterday in the White House Rose Garden. Republican House Speaker John Boehner pushed for a conference committee with the Senate to discuss potential changes to the Affordable Care Act.
The House has made its position known very clearly. We believe that we should fund the government, and we think there ought to be basic fairness for all Americans under Obamacare. The Senate has continued to reject our offers. But under the Constitution, there's a way to resolve this process, and that is to go to conference and talk through your differences. And I would hope that the Senate would accept our offer to go to conference and discuss this so that we can resolve this for the American people.
Well, the Senate rejected that effort, as well as several separate spending bills that would allow operations to continue for select federal agencies and sites. Democratic Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid blamed the impasse on conservative House members associated with the Tea Party.
My friend, the Republican leader, spoke as if George Orwell wrote his speech. This is 1984, where up is down, down is up, east is west. Mr. President, all one needs to do is look at the press. We have a situation where we have a good day for the anarchists. Why? Because the government is closed. Speaker Boehner and his band of Tea Party radicals have done the unthinkable. They've shut down the federal government. Now, for us, that's hard to comprehend as being good. For them, they like it.
Harry Reid, Senate Majority Leader. Well, it's time for you to sound off, river to river listeners. Sound off about this shutdown. What message do you want to send to your representative, to your congressman, to your senator, to our congressional delegation in Washington at this time? A partial shutdown in Washington in the federal government, the first time in 17 years. Who's to blame in your eyes? Will it matter for you when it comes to the next elections, 2014? Will you remember this? What do you see as a way forward? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Let's turn to Tim Hagel and Wayne Moyer. Wayne Moyer, let me start off by just asking you generally, where do you see us now? Characterize the second day of the shutdown.
Well, what strikes me is that both sides have got themselves into more or less non-negotiable positions. And it's hard to see how we get out of this at the moment without one side or the other losing face. The president won't give up at all on Obamacare and preserving it, and the Republicans won't give up at all in terms of fundamentally changing Obamacare. And so I don't at this stage see a way out until the discussion can be changed somewhat from what it is now.
Okay. Tim Hagel, your view on where we are right now is, do you see a way out of this without someone losing face, a party?
Well, there probably are ways out of it somehow. Unfortunately, no one's come up with them yet. That's the sticking point. I think I would agree with Wayne that clearly, and even many Republicans agree, that certainly President Obama is not going to radically curtail the implementation of his signature policy. That's just not going to happen, because even if somehow the Senate went along with whatever it is that the Republicans in the House pass, he's going to veto it, and they certainly don't have a veto-proof majority for anything they pass. But on the other hand, there are some things that the Republicans have proposed that would maybe give an opportunity for Obama to maybe the delay, for example, of the individual mandate. Now, that's central to Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and so
forth. There's no sign that he's going to accept that either, though, is there?
There isn't, and that's the problem. But that, given that he has delayed other aspects of it, then it's something that he could say that, well, okay, you know, maybe this is something that we could offer as, in terms of flexibility without weakening the program. So that's kind of the key, is that if he wants the program to continue. And here's the other point, too, and this is the thing that some Republicans don't want the program to go into effect at all, because most of those folks realize that once a federal program begins, it's almost impossible to kill it. And so from Obama's perspective, if he wants to make sure that the program is going to continue at least in some form, if he can even just delay it, might be a way to still get it into effect later. And here's the strategy for 2014, is that if you delay it, then you delay some of the pain that at least Republicans think is going to occur from implementation of the program. And so it pushes it past the 2014 elections. And my guess is there are probably some Democrats as well as Republicans that would like that pain to be delayed.
Okay, but it would continue in some form. I mean, it is a law. We are hearing several Republicans going back in time and calling it a bill, but it's a law, so it would continue, wouldn't it?
Well, I think, you know, if they're calling it a bill, that may just be, you know, sloppy language on some people's parts. I'd have to know the context to know if they were trying to purposely suggest that it was something other than the law. Certainly it is the law, but laws can be changed. And certainly we've seen that already from President Obama, where he has, as Republicans have complained, that he has curtailed certain portions of it, granted waivers, granted extensions, all these sorts of things. And so they say, well, you know, do this again to basically postpone this program. And of course, that's what the president doesn't want to do at this point.
Price tag. Wayne, please go.
Say a little bit on that. From Obama's perspective, to delay this essentially gives the Republicans more time to try to shoot the proposal down or shoot the law down. And also, this gets to the extension of the debt ceiling. The Republicans want to delay this to a point where the debt ceiling comes up again, so they will have an opportunity to do what they're doing right now again a year from now.
Here's an email from a listener. How many of our delegates will be drawing their salary while they've shut down the government? and aren't paying federal employees, including the military. This listener said, I called Congressman Braley yesterday, got no answer. Ann Wagner isn't taking her salary. Why should our delegates be drawing a salary if they can't do their job? So there's a lot of anger out there, and it's really the question is where will the blame find a home, Tim Hagel?
Yeah, well, certainly right now, and the Democrats in the House, I've watched a lot of C-SPAN and C-SPAN 2 over the last several days, and they are fully blaming the Republicans, and in particular the Tea Party, and you heard that in Senator Reid's clip there. And, you know, the media, even to the extent that they're just reporting what's being said, that they're basically showing this, and it seems to be the Republicans. As far as who among Congress is taking a salary, well, technically they all get a salary, but at least if a number of Republicans, I haven't heard of any Democrats that have done this yet, but a number of Republicans have said that they will forego their salaries, donate it to charity or something while the government is shut down.
You mentioned the Tea Party. Let's listen to this audio from Iowa Republican U.S. Congressman Steve King of Iowa's 4th District. He came out of a meeting yesterday morning, saying the GOP was more unified than ever. And here's what he had to say, that the partial government shutdown may lead to good things.
We know this, that this isn't going to go on for a long time. The pressure builds every day. Each hour that goes by now brings us closer to a conclusion. And for that, I'm glad we're at this point and we're past the witching hour and we can get this thing to a conclusion.
So I'm wondering, Tim Hagel, how do you see that Steve King is in the Tea Party caucus? Mm-hmm. According to his plan, how does this self play itself out into the advantage of the Tea Party?
Well,
what's the path?
There are two different aspects to that. The first is what you're saying, what's the path? And that's the path to resolving the shutdown. And as Congressman King was noting, that the pressure builds. And so something at some point is going to have to give. At the very least, politically for the Tea Party, again, maybe they're going to catch a lot of flack, so to speak, from Senator Reid and other Democrats and even people that are affected by this. But as far as the voters, the base, that they are very happy to see someone standing up and fighting for what they sent members of Congress to do, which is to try to rein in spending, to try to have more accountability in terms of the fiscal side of things. Now, granted, a lot of the people that don't want that kind of cuts in spending, that they're very unhappy about this and they're perfectly happy to say these things about the Tea Party. But the Tea Party folks are, again, happy somebody like a Senator Ted Cruz, who is even getting some criticism from the Republican ranks, that the Tea Party folks, the base, are happy that somebody is standing up and fighting for the principles that they believe in. Now, whether that's going to adhere to their benefit in the long term is hard to say.
Mm-hmm. Wayne Moyer, talk about that. Steve King and the Tea Party caucus. Ted Cruz getting a big profile out of the developments in the last few days.
Sure. One of the things that strikes me, and this sort of builds on what Tim was saying, most of the Tea Party seats in the House of Representatives are very, very safe Republican seats, and more so after the last census and then the redistricting that came afterwards. So they are not going to be endangered, I think, by the crisis, and in fact may actually be strengthened politically in that they will not have primary opponents from the right. I think the problem comes up when we get into the senatorial for the Republicans, when we get to the senatorial elections and then the next presidential elections, as to what may help these individual congressmen in their own districts may not help the Republican Party nationally or at a state level.
Mm-hmm. Facebook post from Tony. We're wanting you to join our conversation, to sound off on the message you want to send to our congressional delegation in Washington. Whose fault is it in your eyes? How do we get out of this impasse? 1-866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. We're also on Facebook, or email works as well, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Facebook post from Tony. Tony writes, I blame the entirety of Congress. Their primary responsibility is to budget the nation's finances, which has not been done since 2009. They should all be fired with no opportunity for reelection. How many people do you know, asks Tony, that could not do their job for 4 years and still keep that job? It's ridiculous. Let's go to Matt in Des Moines. Matt joined us by phone here. Hi, Matt. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Basically, while I do agree with certain points the Republicans make about certain aspects of the health care law going into effect, like how employers get a year off, of get a year delay, but individuals don't for the individual mandate, the bill they're supposed to be passing is government funding. It doesn't have anything to do with that bill. They're basically, like the Democrats have said, they're holding the government hostage over this idea that they don't like the Affordable Care Act. And that's fine. They cannot like it. But attaching it to everything else and essentially trying to force the Democrats to pass this just so they can fund the government is pretty ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Matt, in a new poll from the independent Quinnipiac University poll finding Americans are certainly not in love with Obamacare, but they reject decisively, as you seem to, the claim by congressional Republicans that it's so bad it's worth closing down the government to stop it. Tim Hagel, any other words on public opinion? That has been the claim of the Republicans to say, what, Obamacare is not popular. We're doing the people's work here in the House of Representatives, right?
Yeah, and the Matt's point is one that's perfectly reasonable in the sense of, well, why are you doing this in order to get that? But that's kind of how Congress works, for good or bad, in terms of that kind of leverage. And I took a quick look before coming in today at the reasons behind the prior 17 government shutdowns, and they all tended to have something to do, except one, which was just really strange, but they all tended to have something to do with some specific issue of funding, and then Congress or the president holding it up based on not wanting some other particular policy. And so that leverage kind of goes along. And the other thing to say about this is that the Republicans right now in the House are trying to get around that problem to a certain extent by saying, okay, well, we will fund certain portions of government. And yesterday they brought up three resolutions to try to fund for benefit veterans benefits, national parks, and some other things. But at least yesterday they needed, because of the way they were doing it, they needed a two-thirds majority and they didn't get it. So I think today they're going to try again some of these many continuing resolutions to try to do the funding, but the Senate's still rejecting it because they see it as an end run.
Wayne Moyer, do you see this piecemeal approach being put forward by the Republicans having any chance?
I don't think it has a chance, but let me just say, I think there's a much bigger problem here, and that is that the Congress, particularly the House of Representatives, is unable at the moment to come up with a federal budget. That everything is continuing resolution. Nobody comes up with a full-fledged budget. They haven't been able to do it for the last couple of years. What's going on right now is part of that, but if for any kind of long-term planning of the government, we need to have budgets. And somehow, and the way Congress is working right now, it is incapable of doing that. And I think that is new.
Alex is with us in Des Moines. Hi, Alex.
Hi. My thought was that it goes along with one of your previous commenters' comments that, the redistricting in 2010, in so many states, I'm originally from Pennsylvania, 50.7% of people voted Democrat in the 2012 election, but the state has represented 513 Democrat to Republican. So in so many states, the representation isn't actually reflective of the way people are voting these days because of the redistricting in 2010. And I think so many seats are such blocks for Republicans these days that they only have primary challengers instead of general challengers, like some legitimate Democratic election or Democrat opponent. So they tend to have to swing right to get their primary votes out. And so that's really leading to a lot of conflict between what Congress is doing and what people want Congress to be doing, I think.
Alex, thank you very much. So it's something of our own making, Tim Hagel, here, redistricting, partisan redistricting, gerrymandering to make very safe districts, then it makes sense that we're led to this, doesn't it?
Well, that's one of the things that some people have suggested, is that the redistricting and sort of having safe seats, and that most states, unlike Iowa, do allow their legislatures to be more involved so you get more partisan. And it's not just the Republicans, of course. The Democrats, of course, have most of their seats are safe Democratic seats as well. And so you'll get states where, even to use California as an example, as the biggest state, where the Republicans and Democrats actually more or less work together to ensure that the majority of their legislators are safe, regardless of whether it's Republican or a Democrat. And so that's one of the reasons why so few seats in the House are, in fact, competitive. And that's one, at least the theory goes, that that's one reason why members of the House and both parties seem to be more extreme and therefore have a harder time getting along.
Many, many of our listeners want to get in on the conversation. We want to spend the rest of the hour getting to as many calls and reading your tweets, emails as well. This tweet from Peter: I don't blame anyone per se, but the voters put these people in Congress that don't work together. Party lines have been damaging. Here's a tweet from Jock: extortion should be condemned no matter which party instigates. Let's go to Joe in Donahue. Joe, a couple minutes before we have to take a break. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I have three short comments. Number one, I agree that we the voters, and when I say we, I mean all Americans, we the voters put these people in, and we knew what they said in their campaigns, and they're very polar opposites, and now we expect them to work together. I mean, it seems like we're asking for something on the one hand, and we didn't make it possible on the other when we voted them in. My second comment is, we know from past experience over the last couple of years that the Republicans in the House want to kill what they call Obamacare. They've had, I don't know how many bills that they sent to the Senate to get rid of it. So we know what their ultimate purpose is. So I really do believe that Obama is correct here in saying we must draw the line. I'm not going to compromise any further. I know what you want. You want to nibble away at it and nibble away at it until there's nothing left. And my third comment is that I think over the past 2 days, if the news that I've heard is correct, a lot of people are rushing to sign up for Obamacare. So it seems like the people who need it are, in fact, trying to sign up for it and find out what it's all about. So the people who need it, in fact, are saying, yes, we want this bill. We want this opportunity to have insurance.
Okay. Thank you very much, Joe. Yesterday, a momentous day, the rollout of Obamacare's online health insurance exchanges. What does the rush tell you, Wayne Moyer?
Well, it certainly tells me that there's a lot of interest in this. It doesn't necessarily tell me how many people are actually going to sign up for it. But there clearly is very, very broad general interest in at least finding out about it. And I guess my take on that is that that's a positive sign in terms of numbers of people who are likely and willing to sign up for it.
Okay, Tim Hagel, just a few seconds before we go to break, what does the rush tell you? What happened yesterday?
There was something between, from what I read, 4 and 5 million attempts or hits on the various sites. And a lot of those, I have to imagine, were reporters trying to test the system from what I saw yesterday. But one statistic that I saw out of Connecticut, that apparently of the people that tried to sign up, less than 1% of the hits actually resulted in a successful sign up. So the rollout has to get better.
Okay, we're asking you, our listeners, to sound off about politics now, the partial government shutdown, the rollout of Obamacare. Stephen Toledo writing to us. We'll leave this going into the break. There is food in my fridge, planes in the air, life is going on. You may not be as important as you think, America. America is not as asinine as the federal government. Okay, well, we'll come back with more of your reaction and with our analysts, Tim Hagel and Wayne Moyer. This is River to River Politics Day. More after a short break. River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On this, the second day of the partial government shutdown, the first one in over 17 years. No clear path forward. Republican and Democratic leaders remaining entrenched in separate camps. President Obama will be talking to congressional leaders in the White House later today. But so far, also with our political analysts, not seeing too much wiggle room for each of the parties' positions here. We want to reach out to you also in this half hour to ask you, what message do you want to send to our congressional delegation in Washington? How do we get out of this impasse? How did we get into it? 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Joining us this week with their analysis, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College. And, we didn't mention John McCain. He's played an interesting role in this debate. Arizona Senator John McCain has joined the chorus of voices calling for an end to this partial shutdown. McCain is never afraid of criticizing members, even of his own party. And on CNN, he warned of the consequences for Republicans.
Well, my reaction is that it's unnecessary, and I am afraid that the American people, as they have in the past, will blame Congress, i.e., Republicans. And what's particularly disappointing is that Obamacare is going to have a lot of problems in its rollout. The president's polling numbers are falling in every category, and yet the story is to the American people that Republicans are fighting Republicans. That's not helpful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wayne Moyer, we've heard talk, our listeners as well as we have listened to pundits, experts talk about the Republican Party. Is this something that might split the Republican Party, or are there really two parties here?
Well, I'm not sure there are two parties. There certainly are very significant differences within the Republican Party. The members of the party, and Tim can probably speak better to this than I can, have a real interest in working together. Clearly, Republican senators who are competing in entire states have different interests than members of the House who are in gerrymandered districts, which are extremely safe.
Mm-hmm. Tim Hagel, how do you see this? Do you see this as developing a wider rift within the GOP? We have John McCain here. Once we termed John McCain a maverick, and now our maverick goes to Ted Cruz, doesn't it?
Well, yes and no. I mean, certainly that's the way some people want to portray it. And they, some even within the Republican Party want to try to isolate Ted Cruz, but certainly the Democrats really do and have heaped a lot of criticism on him for his role in this. The thing is, though, that even though Republicans are generally pretty united on the idea that they don't like Obamacare, and even McCain has pointed out this before and was critical of some of the comments that Ted Cruz made during his 21-plus hour speech, that what they're differing on is the tactics, how to approach it. And again, McCain makes points that many other Republicans make in the sense that they're going to get criticized if the government shuts down, which it has now, and so forth. But again, a significant number of members of both of the House in particular, but the Senate as well, Ted Cruz among them, Senator Mike Lee of Utah, another one, see that if the program is implemented, that you won't be able to stop it regardless. And even that would probably be the case if you had Republicans somehow took over the Senate. They have to wait until they would take the White House, potentially in 16. So, it's certainly not going to happen for a couple of years. But again, unless if the program is implemented in any way, the way they see it is if the program is implemented in any way, they'll lose their opportunity to stop it in entirety.
Michelle is joining us from Ames. She dialed 1-866-780-9100. Thank you for waiting, Michelle.
Yes, I'm on disability, so I have Section 8 housing and food stamps, Social Security. And my concern is that if this shutdown continues, that it's going to affect those programs, especially since there is no farm bills and it doesn't look like they're doing anything about any of these programs, bills that protect these programs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Michelle.
So how long is it going to last?
Oh boy. Okay, Tim. How long is it going to last?
Yeah. Well, that's the big question. And as the clip earlier played from that talked about with Steve King saying that the pressure builds every day, and it certainly does. And so I probably won't last all that long. Although the complicating factor, as was previously mentioned, is that we're also in mid-October going to be dealing with the raising of the debt ceiling. And so at that point, it becomes a much more complicated issue that certainly as far as the entitlements that you mentioned are concerned that those should continue. But on the other hand, the longer the shutdown lasts, the more problems sort of multiply in terms of mailing out checks and doing those kinds of things that usually government officials try to work around that. But at a certain point, it becomes very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Michelle worried about with her in position of having a disability. Michelle, let's listen to a couple other voices, people directly being affected by this shutdown right now. A Quinnipiac University national poll showing American voters opposing 72% to 22% shutting down the federal government to block the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. Opposition may be highest among government employees who are furloughed as a result of the partial shutdown. NPR spoke with one employee protesting the shutdown outside of Independence Hall in Philadelphia.
Our congressional leaders can't agree. They don't know how to negotiate with one another. They have put themselves and their politics in front of the American people. And that's a shame.
Here's another one in Washington, D.C.
My name is Heather Pizzamilio. I'm an analyst for the Department of the Navy. We got hit with the sequestration. Now we're on furlough, and I don't know what to expect. I'm a conservative, so speaking to my conservative Hill members, stop messing around and stop putting us at risk.
One of the River to River listeners, Mel, writing, the Tea Party is holding the economy hostage, she writes. The problem that we run into is not having fair elections because of the gerrymandering. Therefore, these guys can do whatever and not face the consequences. I also agree that if the delay is negotiated, the precedent is set that one small group of fanatics can hold the economy hostage if they do not agree with a law that has been passed and constitutional, according to the Supreme Court. I am an economist. I can tell you this is definitely going to hurt the recovery. This aspect of constantly going with continuing resolutions is terrible. It's one reason why the economy is struggling. And that's an opinion here. Let's go to Tom in Des Moines. Tom, hi.
Hello, Ben. Good to speak with you again.
Good to have you on the. What perspective do you have?
Well, from my vantage point, this is an incredible act of self-righteousness from a party that's known for its self-righteous behavior. They deign to speak for the people on Obamacare when it's obvious that they don't. If you listen to them closely, this is what they're saying, that Obamacare is bad for the economy. And incidentally, we had a a cartoon in the Register on Sunday, I believe it was, that indicated that, although there's no evidence for that whatsoever. So my suggestion is that the only way to end this problem of the shutdown is to put enough pressure on Boehner and the Republican leadership in the House to offer a clean continuing resolution. And I wonder what your guess would say is the prospects of that. Can we eventually... you know, once, as Steve King says, people start to crack a little bit, enough Republicans will come to their senses in the House willing to vote for a clean continuing resolution bill.
Okay, Tom, thank you for that input from Des Moines. Let's talk about it as we start to wind up this hour. The scenarios you see, Tim and Wayne, for bringing this shutdown to a close. Tom there just talking about the pressure ratcheting up. One scenario would be Republicans fold. Tim, do you see that as the most likely scenario?
I don't know that it's the most likely, but it's certainly one of them. That certainly right now, as I say, as we mentioned previously, the Republicans in the House are trying to pass these mini continuing resolutions, which in effect have the same effect as a bigger one. But again, the Democrats see this as an end run around the particular problem, and they don't want that. They want sort of an all-or-nothing approach. And at least right now, the perception is as well, that's the Republicans that are refusing to cave in. But the Democrats are holding their position, too. And just sort of as a side note, too, it's not just the Tea Party that's doing this, because if it was just the Tea Party caucus in the House, they wouldn't have enough votes to hold up. It's the Republicans in general that are pretty solid in their position right now. But again, that could weaken.
But couldn't we say, if not for the few dozen Tea Party Republicans in the House, this would not be happening?
I don't know so much that it's just the folks in the House. It's more how those folks got there, which is to say that people, the voters in the various districts, and you can talk about the gerrymandering or the redistricting and so forth as being part of this, but without those voters expressing their opinion by sending those members to Congress, then, yeah, it probably wouldn't be the issue that it is today.
Wayne Moyer, pressures are building. Where do you see the cracks coming?
I think part of it depends on the evolution of public opinion. If it holds something like 70% blame the Republicans for it and only 20% the Democrats, I think the Republicans will be under a lot of pressure to cave. I think there is a possibility this will go to the debt ceiling debate, which is essentially two weeks from now. And at that point, the two parties will have to come together. Otherwise, it's going to be a cataclysm in terms of the economy. And I sense there's an opportunity there because at that point, you'll be able to debate overall budget issues. And Obama may be able to make some concessions there, which may give something of a victory to the Republicans, and the Republicans will then find it easier to give up asking for significant changes to Obamacare. That, to me, is the point where negotiations, it seems to me, have a likely positive outcome.
Mm-hmm. And this week's government shutdown, as you've mentioned before in the hour, possibly a warm up for an even bigger budget battle in a couple of weeks. Congress needs to raise the limit on the amount of money the federal government is allowed to borrow. Debt ceiling not raised in time. Washington won't be able to keep paying its bills. So these two will come together, creating even more pressure, Tim Hagel?
Yeah, that's what Wayne is suggesting. I would hope that it doesn't take that long, that we can maybe get this initial problem resolved. And I would think that members of both parties would like to have that. But on the other hand, too, because as Wayne was saying, the even greater and significant effects that you would have for not raising the debt ceiling, and again, there are legitimate concerns on both sides, that if that doesn't happen, then you'd have wider effects than what we're seeing, at least in day two of the current shutdown. In terms of affecting the economy, whether it's the recovery specifically or just more generally what's going on. So, yeah, the pressure would be on, and we would hope, as Wayne was saying, that then the president has more flexibility to find a way that maybe both parties, Democrats and Republicans, can walk away from the table with something at least.
Okay, Stefan in Des Moines, let's get to some of the emails and the posts that we're getting here. Stefan in Des Moines writing, so Congress went from basically doing nothing to literally doing nothing. I just have a hard time understanding why the Affordable Care Act got passed democratically, and it was a major part of President Obama's reelection campaign, which he won fair and square. To me, the whole situation seems like a complete disregard of the voice and interest of the people. Writing Stefan in Des Moines. Jeff posts on our Facebook page, we can blame Republicans, we can blame Democrats, Tea Partiers, and countless others. The bottom line is people hold the power. We just choose to not use it. We need to start voting, writes Jeff. We need to start voting incumbents out of office. Never voting for an incumbent has a potential to fix lots of problems such as gerrymandering, lack of cooperation in Congress. I don't care if a good politician loses his or her job. Guess what? It's a big country, and there are scores of extremely qualified individuals to fill the role. Wayne Moyer, realistic to say, throw out all the bums.
Yeah, well, the question there is what will you get in place of the bums? If you're starting with the same congressional districts, you may well get people who have just the same beliefs. So I can understand the frustration, but I think solving the problem is much more than just throwing people out of office.
Let's talk a little bit about the future. So what questions, Tim, do you have as we have our political crystal ball here? It's fairly hazy, as we've determined during the hour, to tell the future. What questions do you want the answer to that will help us know how this turns out?
Well,
we could be a fly on the wall in certain places in Washington, D.C. That would tell us a lot. But
yeah, I guess the thing would be is if the thing to know or the question to ask is, what is it that might cause particularly the president and the Democrats to be able to give in a little bit? Again, they want to protect Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and make sure that at least at some level it's implemented, because they see this, again, as their signature thing, and you know, just for policy reasons, this is what they want, and that's understandable. But given that a number of people, you can talk about polls or members of Congress, don't like it, or at least don't like the current idea of it, you know, can they make some changes to reduce the opposition somehow that would somehow break up the current Republican coalition in the House so that they could find some common ground? And, you know, from the Republican side, the same sort of thing. Is there something that they can do that would, you know, maybe help to address some of their concerns, but still make what they feel is a certain amount of progress? And so and that's the big question right now. We just don't see it. And again, as we were saying before, that until the pressure builds sufficiently, we may not see a resolution, at least to this. And as Wayne was saying earlier, may not see it until we then complicate matters by getting into the debt ceiling issue.
Wayne Moyer?
Let me take the other side of it. I think a thing I would hope would happen is that the Republicans would broaden their focus a bit away from Obamacare. As long as that is the issue, it's going to be very – the only issue, so to speak. It's going to be hard to break the deadlock.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people who have been emailing, calling in. We won't get to everybody, unfortunately, this hour. A lot of people – though, really focusing in on why members of Congress continue to draw their salary when their approval rating is 10%. And if we look at them as an employee, and you had a comment about that, that perhaps some representatives were going without without salary. Wayne, did you what is your observation on that?
That's a hard thing. A lot of congressmen probably don't need their salaries. There are some that do. There is also an issue of congressional staff, and many of congressional staff really do need their salaries. I'm hesitant in cutting salaries off, although the people who are out of work have lost their salaries, and it is because of Congress.
Mm-hmm. We'll see how this goes on, ratcheting up the pressure. Of course, we'll hear news stories about the ramifications here. Here's the price tag for the first government shutdown in 17 years from one source: about $1.6 billion a week, $300 million a day, $12.5 million an hour. An estimate from the economic consulting firm IHS Global Insight covering just the cost in work and services the government is unable to perform as it furloughs these 800,000 federal workers. I wonder, when we look back, and it's been mentioned, referenced several times, not only in this hour, but as this gets analyzed, this is the first shutdown since 95, 96. That's when President Bill Clinton faced off with the GOP-controlled Congress. Compare that, Tim, with the standoff between Obama and the Republicans over this federal budget today. Are the environment quite a bit different?
Well, it is. And one of the things that helped President Clinton at the time was that because of things that were going on extraneous to the budget issues, in part personally with, I suppose, him and in opposition Newt Gingrich at the time. But you had the Whitewater and a number of other things that were going on. And so that a number of people, the public, basically thought that this was another attempt to undercut President Clinton on sort of that personal level, that they didn't see the underlying reasons for it as being, you know, legitimate discussions of the budget or what have you. And so Clinton came through that pretty well, and the blame was placed pretty squarely on the shoulders of Republicans in general, but Newt Gingrich in particular. Having said that, the Republicans did not do that badly in the 96 elections, even though Clinton was reelected and then, of course, eventually went on for success later. So it's hard to say how much blame people are going to attach to it. Plus, the other thing that I commented on that's hugely different between now and then is the media landscape, that you have many more outlets, the web in particular, social media that simply did not exist at the time. So people are getting much more information about it that is of different points of view. And so this, we're sort of waiting to see how the public reacts to that.
Let me add one other difference here. We were in pretty good economic shape at the previous shutdown. We now have a very slow recovery. If you've got 800,000 people out of work, not drawing salaries, that's clearly going to slow down the what recovery we have taking place now. And we know that the economy affects the way that people vote. I'm not quite sure how this is going to smoke out in the long run, but it seems to me a shutdown at this particular moment, given the relatively weak economy, is going to have some pernicious effects.
Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, where Wayne Moyer is Rosenfield Professor of Political Science. Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. Thank you both for joining us. We will pick this up as the saga continues in the days and weeks to come. Tim and Wayne, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Sorry for all the calls, emails, Facebook posts we didn't get to, but there'll be another Politics Wednesday next week. We'll find out what develops in the meantime. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.